At the Table with Tony is brought to you by Trafe Hustlin'. That's www.traifhustlin.com. Your home for all things barbecue. Welcome to At the Table with Tony. My name is Anthony Sciglia, better known as Tony Mangia. And today I have the extreme honor of welcoming my friend Mike DiSapio. He's amazing, first of all. He's a great guy, great person, a great Italian American, really proud of his culture. But the reason why I asked him to come on the show today is to talk about Italian dual citizenship. And the name of his company, he has DiSapio Dual Citizen Services, right?
Yeah. Yep. DiSapio Dual Citizenship Services. Yep.
Okay, so I could put that let me get it there. There it is. We'll put it on the bottom of the screen.
Right. Perfect.
For those that want to go visit him on the website. So, Mike, again, thank you for taking some time out to come on the show and talk a little bit about. I do want to talk a little bit about about your history and how you got involved with researching your ancestry, mm-hmm. and then we'll get into some more about what is dual citizenship, and of course, if people have questions or comments, they can also contact us. We're live now on YouTube and Facebook. So first of all, thank you for coming on the show, Mike.
My pleasure. Thanks, Tony. Thanks for having me on.
Thank you for taking some time out. I know. Most of us have some time on our hands now.
A lot of time to kill these days, so like everybody else.
maybe not much, but a little bit.
Yeah.
So I know whenever I get some extra time, I like to do these shows. I like to, kind of bring the Italian-American community, usually food-based. But again, we also talk about I've done shows about faith, about saints. This is going to be great because, to be honest, I am exploring my options on this whole dual citizenship, but we will get to that in a little bit. First, I want you to introduce yourself, Mike. So tell us a little bit about yourself, your background, where you're from. I know you're a Jersey boy.
That's
so,
right.
So give us a little bit of your background.
So, I was born and raised in Hunterdon County, New Jersey. I'm in Kingwood Township, which is outside of Frenchtown, New Jersey. Born and raised here. I, studied abroad and went to Penn State for college, but I ended up coming back here. So I didn't get far from home. I actually live on DiSapio Lane. it's a great place to grow up. It's very rural. When I was younger, there wasn't a lot of Italian Americans in the area, but the DiSapios are a sizable family. So it felt like an Italian enclave. But as the years went on, there were more and more families moved out this way. We're right in the thick of it. So that's pretty much it.
So, what is your Italian background? So I'm sure Southern Italian, right?
Yeah. So my dad's family was, my grandfather came over from Monteforte, which is in Campania, about 15 minutes from Avellino. And my mother was born in Calabria. She was born Calabrese, but she was actually, it's a funny story, she was adopted into a Sicilian family. So growing up, she considered herself Sicilian, and she was very proud of it. And I mean, she knew she was Calabrese, but I didn't really realize that until, into my teenage years. So I have an affinity for the Sicilian culture too. But
yeah, as you can see from behind, I have my Sicilian flag. That's part of my culture, and I just love that. I love the flag of Sicily.
Yeah, yeah, they're very.
It has a lot of meaning to it. A lot of mm-hmm. Pride, because when people say, "Are you?" I know, especially for my wife's family, because they're 100% Sicilian. When they say, "What are you?" They don't say Italian. They say we're Sicilian.
but my father's side is the side that we keep in touch with. The cousins over there, and with the wonder of social media now, it's a lot easier to do these days. So.
So when did your – was your father born here or he was born
my
there?
My father was born here. Yep, okay. His father was born in Italy, and he came over with my great-grandparents. He was about – I think he was 9 or so when he came with them.
So now you actually sent me a picture. I'm going to share this picture right now. This is of your dad's family?
Yeah, so that's – my dad is in the lower left-hand corner there. This was in my grandmother's parents' apartment in Hoboken.
Oh, wow.
So all the kids there are aunts and uncles. My grandfather is there with the two kids on his lap. And then my grandmother's there on the right, kind of hiding in the back. And, and then it's my great-grandparents in the middle. Oh, yeah.
A lot of that. If, as a famous saying, if this image could speak, I'm sure it would tell an amazing story.
Yeah, I love that picture, and I feel bad. My Uncle Jim is probably the one taking the picture. My dad was one of eight, and he's the only one not pictured there. But the reason we were talking about it is that Luciano, my great grandfather, is the one that I actually qualified for dual citizenship through him.
And that is the gentleman with the tie on?
Yes. Yep.
Okay. Right
in the center of the picture there. You have the older gentleman.
Okay. Yeah. So we're going to get into that a little bit. Actually, we do have a couple of comments I want to bring up. So somebody said, Mike, what part of Sicily was your mom raised?
Oh, she was born in Calabria. And when she was adopted to a Sicilian American family. So,
okay. So it wasn't
here when she was 5 years old.
Okay.
And that was the other picture I sent you. Was their first day here. Actually, I think it was younger than five. They look like pretty little kids. Yeah, that's my mom and her brother there, and with my great grandfather. So she was born in Venice, in Calabria, right outside of Locri.
Okay, but where is this? Where was this photo taken?
That picture is in New Jersey. It's in Tewksbury, New Jersey, about 20 minutes from where I live now.
Now, so how did your family end up? Because you mentioned Hoboken, that's your father's family. That's where they first settled.
That was my grandmother's. My father's mother's family was in Hoboken.
Okay.
My grandfather's family came. You know, the older siblings, they were right near Little Italy in Manhattan for a few years, and then they moved, when the whole family came over. That's an interesting story too. So. They were farmers, right? So my grandfather wanted to buy a farm, my great-grandfather. And they went with a realtor, pretty much up in the tri-state area. They went to Connecticut, New York, New Jersey. And at each stop, my great-grandfather would kneel down and taste the dirt. And I guess the dirt tasted pretty well in Kingwood Township here. So that's where they settled.
Oh, that's a story there. Have you ever seen this movie called Mac with John Turturro? Who is it? Capitordo. I think his name is Paul Capitordo. Okay. Michael Badalamenti.
Yeah.
So it's all about like this family that they came to America. That you know the parents, the father and the mother, and then how he instilled in his family. The worth ethic of an Italian and the brothers they opened up their own construction company, were building houses, and really if you get a chance to find this movie,
it came out
like in the early 90s, but the movie is phenomenal movie, but it reminds you kind of like you know how they take pride you know with the dirt and with the
So they started, you know, they were growing up. My grandfather, they sold produce in Hoboken. So my grandmother's building was one of the, one of the buildings they sold produce to. So the rest is history.
So where was she from in Italy?
She was from I believe it was Altopalda, which is not far from Montefort, and also in Campania.
Okay, because I know Hoboken. That's where part of my family's from. There, a lot of them are from Monte San Giacomo, which is Salerno. And then there's the other side. There's a lot of also from Molfetta. And then I think some of the original Italian settlers in Hoboken were actually from Genoa.
Okay.
There was a large Genovese population, as well as there was actually a Sicilian population. Which it's very, very, very.
Her father, she was born in Hoboken, but her father was born in Avellino, but her parents got married in Altopalda.
Okay. Okay. Wow. Yeah. Interesting. Yeah. So. Italian dual citizenship.
Yeah,
it seems like it's this scary thing to figure out. Like, how do you navigate becoming a citizen of another country without actually living there, without actually being born there?
Right.
But there is a way for you to do this in Italy,
correct? Or
through the Italian government,
right? Right.
So what does dual citizenship mean?
So dual citizenship essentially means you could be a citizen of two different countries. It was actually the Italian government that did not allow it up until 1992 is when the law changed. So when that happened, a lot of people started applying for dual citizenship. And what it essentially means is you can be a citizen of two different countries. Back when most of our ancestors came, when they petitioned for naturalization in the U.S., they had to renounce their Italian citizenship. So the law works differently these days. Mm-hmm. And the Italians consider there's several different ways you become a citizen, but what we're talking about mostly here is through right of blood, actually, is how they refer to it. It's through descendancy. And how they consider it to be, you're an Italian citizen. You just have to prove it. So it's not something that you're really applying for. It's just proving that you have that ancestry. And essentially, you have to go back to whatever the last born Italian ancestor was, the person that came over. And if they were still an Italian citizen when that American generation was born, as a rule of thumb, you're generally okay. I mean, there's a few provisos there that
really
we talk about. Yeah. But it depends on the timing. So if the person never became an American citizen, or if they naturalized after their American generation was born, mm-hmm. That right still passes down.
Okay.
That child was born to Italian, quote unquote, Italian parents. So they retain that right, and it gets passed down through the years.
But let me ask you this. So, okay. So say there was five, just for an easy number, I'll say, okay, there were four kids in the family.
Mm-hmm.
Do all four kids had to have been born for that a right to be, I guess, descended to them? Or is it only the person that you're going to go through? So, okay, so let me give you...
Only the person you're going through. So it's your direct line. We're talking grandparents and parents. So
it doesn't matter that Aunt Fanny or that Uncle Joe was born after, you know, great-grandpa so-and-so was a citizen. It's just your grandfather. So if your grandfather was born... Then you still have that right to acquire the citizenship.
So there's some families. Yeah, you're correct. So there's some families where the father was still an Italian citizen when the first two kids were born. Then he got his citizenship, and they had a few more kids. So the descendants of those kids later on, unfortunately, are out of luck.
It's a little. But now, can they? I guess this is a question that you know. I'm sure we're going to get to eventually. But let me just ask it now. Can those people still acquire the citizenship?
They can by other means. So they can become an Italian citizen by naturalization, which is living over there for a certain number of years. Depends if you have Italian ancestors or not, how long you have to be there. Mm-hmm. They could also apply through marriage.
If
they marry an Italian citizen. But all those other options usually have to do with residing in Italy.
Okay. So it isn't as easy then.
Right.
As it is to get it through the bloodline.
Correct. Yeah.
Because you'd have to actually physically live in a place or marry a person that's from there. So it becomes a little bit, I mean, not to say that this process isn't complicated, because like I said, I'm starting to go through it, and it's very complicated. Mm-hmm. Extremely complicated.
Yeah. Well, it's more straightforward than people, I think, realize, but it's the devil's in the details of, you know, the misspellings and documents and getting the proper certifications and things like that. So that's why services like mine exist, to walk people through it.
So now what exactly, so I'm going to email you. I'm going to put it up right now. I'm going to go to your website. I'm going to email. I'm going to say, Mike, I'm thinking about going for my dual citizenship. What do I do?
Right.
Help me.
So what I do is it depends on how much information you have. So if you have the names of your ancestor and kind of generally where they came from in Italy, and you have some information, I would work with you to find out as much as I can to see whether you qualify or not. Mm-hmm. And then it's a matter of getting the documents. A lot of people have that information. At least they have names where we can do some research and find it. Some people don't have much of any info, and they say, I know I'm Italian. I don't know where, you know, it was three generations back and I'm not sure. So in that case, we have to trace it back. You know, we work from their parents to their grandparents and try to determine when that Italian ancestor came over.
Okay.
So once we determine who that ancestor is.
Mike, did I lose you? I think I might have lost Mike. I don't know if it's my computer or if it's – let's see. I think I might have lost Mike. So we were talking – I think I might have lost Mike. Let's see if Yep, it's Mike's computer. I was just listening to it on Facebook. So there's always seems to be these technical glitches, these technical difficulties. So I'm going to see if I can get Mike to come back. I'm going to remove him from the stream for a second and see. He's coming back in now. Okay, good. Yeah, I'll tell you though, the blessings and the curses of doing these live stream videos really are very interesting because as me and my friend Peter talk about, because he had the same trouble, I think, yesterday. So now it's just like we have a whole show planned, and then the technical difficulty strikes, and then we're like humming, like we're like Ralph Cramden and the Honeymooners. But yeah, so this is a very interesting topic because and I do have a couple of comments and a couple of questions that I'm going to get to once Mike gets back into the studio here, the virtual studio. But really, it is super interesting because if you know me, you know that I absolutely love doing genealogical research. If you follow me on Instagram or Facebook or Twitter or whatever, you know that I am probably doing genealogical research literally every day. Like every night when I come home from work, I sit in front of the computer, even if it's for a half an hour, even for 20 minutes, and I just try to do some research. So I'm getting really deep into some stuff, and actually you can find, you know, amazing fine relatives in different countries. So for me, for example, I found some cousins in Italy that for years I've been searching for, and I couldn't find them until just recently. So there is so much that you could do. Let's see. I think Mike is actually joining us now. Let's get him back to this. Mike, are you there?
Yeah. My power went out.
Your power went out?
Yeah, it did. It came right back on, but it went out. So.
Oh man, how is the weather? Is the weather bad down there?
It's raining, but it's not really storming very hard. So I'm not.
I was like humming. I was like Ralph Cramden, humming, humming, humming. But okay, so we were. I was just telling them a little bit about all the ancestral research that I do. But we do have a couple of questions and a couple of comments. If I'm actually going to bring that up, I'm going to bring. So we have a question, I guess, from Tommy LaPiccolo. He said, don't mean to ask this, but how much does the process cost if both parents are from there?
If both parents are from there? So that's, you know, I generally work the fee by, you know, how many generations you have to go back, because the more generations you go back, the more documents and the more time it's put in. I can't speak for other services, but, you know, if your parents are from there and you know what towns they were born in, I would say between 1500 and 2000, if you wanted me to do everything from start to finish, that includes out-of-pocket costs.
Okay.
You know, I know a lot of people would be hesitant to answer that question on the air, but that's generally the way it is. You know, I would lay out what the out-of-pocket costs are, so people realize how much it would be to do it on their own.
Because to be honest, I mean, even just to get certain, because like I said, I'm starting to do this process, and I know I've been to China a bunch of times, and really just to get the paperwork is not cheap.
Right.
I mean, so, you have to. So So exactly. Let's go back to the actual processes and the steps.
So once you have all the family history and you have the dates and locations of where things happened, you have to get what's called certified long form copies of birth certificates, marriage certificates, and death certificates for everybody from you up to that Italian ancestor. And then besides those documents, when you have your Italian ancestor, you have to get their naturalization records, which you would order from the federal government usually. Or if they didn't naturalize, you have to get what's called a certificate of non-existence. So that costs some money. You know, depending on the state, it can cost anywhere from $20 to $50 to get per document to get those certified copies. And the naturalization records, there's actually some contention now because they're proposing to raise the fees. But right now it's $65 to search for the record, and then it's $65 to actually obtain the record once you find the info. Okay. They're proposing to up that to like $230 for the search and $300 for the record, and it's astronomical. So there's
is there a reason behind that?
You know, it's a proposed new rules from the department, the USCIS, the United States Citizenship and Immigration Service. I haven't read the rules too thoroughly, only to verify that they do want to raise it like that. And there's actually a nonprofit that's fighting it. It's mostly researchers and, you know, amateur genealogists and professional genealogists, because, you know, that cost will get passed down to anybody that's doing research. So,
yeah, I mean, in a way you think about it, I mean, like, you know, I'm not this, you know, multimillionaire. I don't have, you know, millions of dollars. And for me, yeah, you know, I'm doing a lot of this, my own research, yeah, and yeah, you know, it does add up. So now you want to pass this cost on to the citizen.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous. Really, yeah. It's sometimes the federal government. Oh, I'm not even going to go there, but right. That's for a different show.
Other problems now. So
we do have.
After you get all the documents, you also have to get them translated into Italian. Mm-hmm. With translation services, anywhere from $25 a page to $50 a page for the documents. And then the last step is to get what they call an apostille for each US document, which is it's an authentication that has to be attached to that document to show the Italian government that it's authentic. Yes. And that ranges state by state. You know, New York, it's $10. New Jersey, it's between 25 and 40, depending on how quickly you want it. Other states, it's $5. Something, you know. So
really, there is no. I guess a standardized price throughout the country. Right. Every state could, you know, kind of controls their own. Their right. own, whatever the rules of the right. of the prices and stuff like that.
Correct. Yeah.
There, we do have a question here from Anthony Dalbo. He says, so during this quarantine, I found my grandfather's Italian birth certificate from 1908 in an old file I was cleaning out. I'm not sure when my grandfather obtained his American citizenship. Where is a good place to start?
So a good place to start, you know, for keeping costs down is to go to a site like Ancestry or Family Search. And enter in, you know, the biographical info to see if you can get an idea of through census records. There'll be a column for citizenship and it'll say AL for alien or NA for naturalized, or there's another abbreviation if they filed their papers. That'll give you an idea if they were naturalized before or after the child was born. But and you could also search the National Archives. But the definitive way to do it is to go to the USCIS website, and if there's a genealogy section, and you could order a search, and you enter all the information you know from that ancestor, and it takes about 2 or 3 weeks to a month to get the results back. But they'll email you a letter saying, we've searched the name, or we've searched different spellings of the name, and here's their certificate number, and mm-hmm. you or a file number. And then you have to go back in and order that actual document. Or they'll have a letter saying we don't have any records of it. And then you go back and order a certificate of non-existence. So I don't have the link in front of me, but it's the United States Citizenship and Immigration Service, the genealogy section.
Okay. Yeah, I think I know. I think I was actually on that website recently. I don't know if I had it. If I still have it up here on my I don't have it, unfortunately, but again, so really, if you're thinking about doing this whole Italian citizenship, you really need a little bit of time, a little bit of patience.
Yep.
Because you can get all this information, you can get all this paperwork, but then the next step is, I guess, to make an appointment with the embassy, not the embassy.
Yeah, the consulate.
So, well, for us, it would be New York City. So what is that about?
That's, that's probably one of my bigger headaches in doing this, because I think if appointments were easier to come by, I'd have a lot more people knocking on my door. So years ago, it was a phone service. You'd call in, you get somebody live, and they would tell you when the next available date is, even if that was 3 years out. At least you'd have a date. Now you have to go through their online system. So you have to register with their online system. And then you have to, once you're registered, you have a password and a, you know, email. And you have to go back in and try to schedule your appointment. Most of the time, it's at least 2 years out from when you're scheduling it. But it goes to 2 years, and if they're all booked, they're all booked. Then you don't have any options. You have to wait. And each day or every other day, you got to keep trying, because they'll release a certain amount of appointments each day. And like what they say to do is wherever time zone you're in, you log on right at midnight Italy time, because that is when they reset their system. it takes, you know, I have clients that get very frustrated because it takes weeks and months to keep trying to get the appointment. You know, my father actually made his appointment on Christmas Eve, and I think we were lucky because everybody was at mass. And so, you know, it was like between dinner and midnight mass, and I logged on, and we found that there was an appointment open because everybody else was busy. But so it's difficult, and they only do it a few times, like from 9 to noon, right? And there's only 9 consulates. So there's several embassies throughout the country, but there's only 9 consulates that do mm-hmm. the citizenship work. So when you think about it, that's a lot of people trying to apply.
And yeah.
So it's frustrating. Yeah, and I really would put some more resources, or I don't know what the Italian government can do to loosen it up, but it's tough.
Two points to that. For me personally, it took me about a week and a half, I think, or maybe 2 weeks to actually get that appointment. And like mm-hmm. you said, it's about 2 or 3 years out. Yeah. So it's a bit, it's, you know, you're waiting. Now the follow-up question to that is, now, obviously we're in the middle of a pandemic. Italy was hit tremendously, yeah. terribly. Does this affect, or would you think that this would affect these citizenship requests?
I think it does, from a perspective of now that the system is actually, you could still register with the online system, like get your password and all that. But the scheduling calendar is down altogether. Mm-hmm. So until they open back up, everybody's kind of on pause. And I'm not even sure what they did with current appointments during this time period, you know, if they did them, you know, remotely or not. But they're not scheduling any new appointments. So there's lots of people out there now that are waiting, mm-hmm. waiting to schedule their appointment. And it's a hard thing to get anyway. So
it's like trying to win the lottery.
Yeah. And so I'm really hoping, and I have a number of customers and clients that are, you know, keep asking, you know, what, anything new going on? And I have to say, no, not yet. But we're hoping in the next few weeks, they're starting to loosen up restrictions there. And hopefully that'll trickle down to the consulates. I'm really hoping the Italian government thinks about putting some resources into expanding, you know, how many officers they have taking these appointments.
Yeah.
So that we can get people in.
So what are some of the benefits of getting your Italian citizenship?
I'd say, you know, so most people, maybe, I don't know, 80% or so, it's the sentimentality, you know, it's the connection to your homeland. And I think that's what a lot of people here are doing it for. But there's some practical reasons as well. Besides connecting to your heritage, I mean, there's hereditary value. So once you're established as an Italian citizen, it passes down the generation. So your children to your grandchildren, they won't have to go through this this process of getting all these documents together. They just send their birth certificate to the consulate and they're registered. Another big one is ease of travel. So once you're an Italian citizen, you're also an EU citizen. So mm-hmm. the rights of an EU citizen would apply to any European country. So you don't have to get a visa if you're going to travel for a you know, extended period of time. You could live, work, rent in any EU country and have the same rights as an EU citizen. So again, you don't have to go through the visa process. Employment opportunities. If somebody's going to work for a European company and they're going to work over there, I think if all of the things are equal, if you have one candidate that's a citizen of that country and one that's not, and you have to invest all these resources into making them, getting them a visa and getting them through that process, I think they're going to take the person that's a citizen and already able to live there. Also, a lot of European countries, including Italy, secondary education is a lot cheaper than it is here. It's funded better. And so you can get a 4-year degree or a master's degree or higher education for a lot cheaper than you would here. So that's another advantage. And owning property, renting property, inheriting property, there's always the Italian bureaucracy, but it's a little less if you're a citizen as opposed to, you know, an American citizen trying to do that.
What about healthcare?
And you're eligible for their health, you know, into their healthcare system. So it's
so if you were traveling abroad and God forbid something happens, you get hurt, you break a foot, you break something, you can be seen by, you know, I guess in a timely manner in one of their facilities.
Correct. Yep. So you have the same rights and as they're in their healthcare system, as you would if you were living there.
But I don't know. I think that really one of the, for me, the main reason would be is that sentimentality, is that connecting with my heritage. You know, I posted a picture earlier today, an hour or so ago, of I colorized and I edited this picture of the two women that you see a lot of. You see this picture a lot. I should have put it up. It's on my phone. It's not on my laptop. But you know, you look at these women, these two beautiful Southern Italian women, and on their faces, this, you know, it's a little bit of fear. There's hope. There's a lot. The expression is, it's very emotional. Mm-hmm. And you know, to think about, you know, the sacrifices that our grandparents, great grandparents, parents even, to come to this country, but yet to still have that connection to the motherland or the homeland or the fatherland, whatever you want to call it, I think is very, very important. So my question is, so when you get your Italian citizenship, are you then connected to a paese or to a città, to a city? How does that work?
Yeah.
You become a citizen of your grandfather's city or?
Yeah, exactly. So it's that Italian ancestor where they were born. That's where you're registered. That's where your hometown is. That's where they send your birth certificate and your marriage certificate. That's why if somebody's been divorced, they still need to have that document as well. So it's recorded in Italy that they're not married, you know? So your hometown becomes that your ancestor's hometown.
Now, what about like, say, so just say, for example, if say you're not divorced, but say like your parents are divorced, your grandparents are divorced, mm-hmm. would you still need those documents as well?
They do still ask for that. Yeah. If possible.
Why is there a reason behind that?
You know, I couldn't tell you off the top. I know when they asked me for it, I try to get it. I mean, that's another question that does come up.
Is it a deal breaker?
No, I don't believe so. So, even birth certificates and things like that are, they want them and but not, you can't always find them. Right. So, you have to work with the consulate in getting ancillary documents, you know. Generally, they don't want a baptismal record, but if you can't find the birth record, you got to show as much information as possible. I mean, we have one. I have a friend who's going through it now and couldn't find that great grandfather's birth certificate. So we have to, you know, get the baptismal, and this is a New York birth. So we're getting baptismal records, and we're having certifications from a genealogist and things like that, because you need to. You know, obviously they were born and you have all their other siblings that were born in the same building and things like that.
But not theirs.
Right, right. So, you know, they'll usually work with you for certain records. You know, now, if you can't find the birth certificate for that Italian ancestor that was born, that's enough. You need to show that.
So that brings up two more questions I have for you. So you obviously need then the person that you're going to get the citizenship through. You need their birth certificate.
Correct.
So how do you – now, we live in America, obviously. How are we going to get their birth certificate in Italy?
That's another fun task. you have to write to the comune, you know, the town hall, and request it. And usually have to, you know, send an authorization. I work with a couple other, you know, contractors, a few people on the ground over there. And even some services here that are similar to mine that have more of a network, depending on the region or where it is, will depend on how I try to approach it. A lot of times the customer or the client will contact them themselves. Now in the age of email, it's easier to send that request. So you have to request it from the community, and some are wonderful, you know, getting those documents. Some take weeks, months of just badgering to get that document. So what, I mean, you don't get the physical, you know, you see the rolls of when somebody records a birth that are scanned in, but what they give you is a transcript essentially of all the info on there. And that's what you get from the town hall.
So there is this website, right?
Antonati is it's a good site. I mean, they for as far as Italian documents, it's probably the best out there. So you could search by, you know, names and years and indexes. But if something doesn't pop up when you do the name search, don't get disheartened, because there's so many documents that they've actually scanned in that they haven't put on the website yet, or it didn't get typed in correctly when they scanned the rolls. there's also ways to go search through the indexes. You know, if you knew the month and the year and the town, if those logs are all scanned in, you go page by page, and most of the time you can find it if it's there. So again, depends on the town, depends on the area, whether it's all scanned in, but that website has the most of them scanned is the best out there that I've seen, that you have a lot of documents.
So I'm going to bring up a, let's see if I can insert this. I actually have a document from Italy. I'm trying to insert it into the, into upload it here. So, like I said, I've been trying to do some genealogical research of my own. And, of course, when you want to find something on your computer, oh, here we go, genealogy. Let's see if I can find my – this would be, my, I guess, my second great-grandfather's – if I can find it. Giuseppe. Let's see if this is it. I don't know if this might be one of the, so I just want to show like what a record looks like for those. So this is actually, this is not probably my grandfather. I don't know if it's hard to zoom in. Actually, this is a birth record.
Yeah. So it's the roles that they would, that's probably about four people or two people worth. Cause they're long entries. That looks like, you know, the birth roles.
So now how does that work? So this is so is this is not technically the birth certificate. This is just the record that is then filed with the comune, with the town in Italy, right? So you're saying from this, then they would be able to give you, like I say, certified copy of the birth that actually took place.
Right. They don't like make a photocopy of that. What they do is they record that information and certify it. And send you that transcript, which is what the consulate wants. But every once in a while, you know, a client will have the original birth certificate that the family took home, which is great.
I'm sure that makes the job a little bit easier.
Yeah.
But so what now? Okay, so now let's talk a little bit about the process of actually getting the citizenship. So you made your appointment. Mm-hmm. The day comes. You go to New York. Well, for us it'd be New York. You go to New York, and so what is? Can you kind of like walk us through a day? So, like what happens? Yeah, so process.
You go up there and you sit down with the case officer, and they just start asking you for documents, and you want to have your pile as organized as you can. So they start, you know, you start handing them documents. They look at it and they're typing forever, and recording things, and then. What they'll do is if there's any issues, they'll have like a list of deficiencies, and they'll say, you know, the ancestor's name is spelled Giuseppe over here, but it's Joseph over here, and they have to match. Mm-hmm. Or there's certain dates that are different on certain documents, and there's they'll give you a list to fix, essentially. Okay. Or if you're missing a document, you know, if you forgot to have a death record or something like that. I mean, if you're there really unprepared, they'll hand it back to you and say, you got to make another appointment. But most of the time, you'll have most of the stuff, and they'll give you a list of what you need to correct. And you get that document or get a record amended, and you mail it back to the consulate. So once they have the whole file complete, they send it to Rome for review. And then they tell you, don't even call us, like, for 8 months a year. Before they review it. And then, you know, sometimes you even forget about it, and then you get a letter or an email, I believe they send now, saying, you know, you've qualified, you're an Italian citizen. Here's the instructions for making an appointment to get your passport and things like that.
You have to go back to the consulate to get the passport?
Yeah, yeah. But it's not, you know, it's a lot quicker to get a passport appointment than it is a citizenship appointment. You're probably talking a few months.
So it's just say, okay, so say that you're pretty well prepared. You have most of the documents. There may be a couple of spelling errors and stuff like that. So they won't say, okay, go back, make another appointment.
No,
more than likely.
They'll tell you, you know, here's your checklist of what you need. And you have to, you know, mail it back in.
Now, do they give you a time frame to get those paperwork back to them?
They say they want it, you know, within 6 months of when you came in.
So, but, I mean, they give you, it's not like they want it next week.
Right, right. But people send it in after the 6 months too, and they'll accept it. I mean,
okay.
I understand from that point of view how difficult sometimes it is to correct some of these things.
Mm-hmm. So we have another. I have another question here. It says, "This is from Anthony Dalbo again. I went to Family Search and found a census for my grandfather from 1940, 7 years prior to my father being born. Citizenship status says NA. What does that mean?"
That means that naturalized is what that stands for. So according to that census, he was a naturalized citizen prior to that date. So, you know, unfortunately, you probably hit a wall in that respect. But if you think some, you know, the census records aren't, you know, these are census workers that went to these tenement buildings and took these records. So they're relying on the answers that were given from the people, and there was language issues. So, it's not a good sign because it indicates they're naturalized. You still want to, if it's your only avenue, you want to order that search from the federal database just to make sure. But that the NA means naturalized. It would say NA for naturalized, AL for alien, and then I believe it's PA when somebody had submitted their paperwork, their petition, but they didn't get their certificate yet. So those are the three possibilities of what that column would say.
So let me see if I understand this now. So when a person back then, say for example, my great grandfather, he wanted to become an American citizen. What would his first step have been to become a citizen? Is it a petition or is it a declaration?
It's the declaration, the petition, and then the naturalization is the progression.
So
the declaration. Yeah, go ahead.
So the date would have to be the initial date of the declaration.
I believe that they go by – he gets the certification, if he went through with the process, it's the date of the certification.
So not the actual declaration saying, I want to become a citizen. Right. It's when they approved him, you're saying.
Right.
Okay. Let's see. We have a – okay, here's another question. This is from Maria on YouTube. What happens if the first name in American is completely different? My grandfather was Gaetano, but when he arrived in America, it was registered as Thomas.
Yeah, so and it's funny. There's a lot of Toms that from Gaetano that that happened. So if there's only a few things that – so they need the Italian birth certificate to match everything else. Mm-hmm. So if you have the Italian birth certificate and then you have half a dozen other documents that say Thomas, it's very hard to get all those documents revised, especially when they're older. The other option is to get what's called a declaratory judgment, that a judge would look at all these documents and say, you know what, it's obvious that it's the same person. It's just an anglicization of, or however you say that. The name was anglicized.
Americanized.
Yeah, Americanized. So it's obvious from my point of view, me being the judge, that this is the one and the same person. So the judgment will say Gaetano DiSapio, also known as Thomas DiSardo, if that was like spelled wrong, Thomas DiSapio, you know, and the judge would sign that and certify it. And you get that translated and take that to the consulate. So it's called a one and the same judgment.
I mean, but so if you have to go through these avenues, though, it can become a little bit more time consuming and a little bit more expensive, correct?
Right. Yeah. So it's you would go to an attorney or you file it yourself, but it's a petition with your, wherever you reside, you know, that your local court, you lay out all these documents and, you know, you point to the fact that it's six kids on this document and they're all listed the same. There's six kids over here for Thomas and they're all the same and the same age. And his wife has the same name and the birth date here, you know, cause when you get marriage documents, the parents' names and birth dates are on there too.
Yes.
So, you know, Thomas so-and-so has the same birth date and same occupation, same wife as the Gaetano that was over here. So that's what that judgment is for, to clear those things up. You know, some of them are simple as a Mary to Maria, but some are right like that, Gaetano to Thomas. And, you know, those are a little more difficult. But if it's rational to you and you can see that it's the same person, you just need a judge to sign off on that, and the Italian government will take that.
And they'll accept that yeah. as proof that Thomas and Gaetano are one and the same.
Right, right.
But I mean that is a great question because you know, like you know, a lot of times this happened. You know, even yeah. if the name was Paul or yeah. Paolo in Italy, Paul here. You know, I mean, Antonio, Anthony. I mean, those names are similar. So, would they give you a hard time with those kind of names? Or again, I guess it depends on the day.
Yeah. So, like my grandmother's maiden name was Carullo on one document, and Carulli with an I on another. Some of those caseworkers will let it go, and some are more stringent. They say it has to be exact.
Exactly.
When I went for my appointment. They made us, you know, we were able to amend the documents rather than have to get a judgment. But when my brother went a little while later with the original documents, not the revised ones, they didn't question it. So it's like,
wow. I guess it just depends on yeah. the mood they're in, how the day is going for them.
Yeah.
Maybe it's better to be the first appointment of the day as opposed to the last.
And that's another common question is that what if my a relative went before me in the same consulate. Do I have to get all those other documents? Generally, if it's the same consulate, they have that original relative will have a dossier number mm-hmm. and you could refer to that. And then you just have to bring in your own birth certificate and things like that. Where if a relative went to another consulate, the policy is now you still have to bring in all those documents as if it was a fresh application.
So actually there was a question a little bit earlier about, you know, if a mother and her three kids were going to go to get their citizenship, would it be, I guess, a little bit easier than once the mother establishes it then for her kids? I guess it would be a little bit easier or
it would, but you want to schedule the appointments at the same, you know, as quick as you can get them in. I wouldn't, you know, you don't want to wait 2 years, have the mother get approved and then go try to get an appointment later. Depends on the consulate. I know Philly, you could have two relatives go in at a time. New York, I think, changed that where you can only have, you know, just yourself. Some consulates will let multiple family members come in at the same time. And some
oh, really?
Yeah. And some families you have to get your own appointment. So in Philly, we're lucky to have a family of four have appointments within a day of each other.
Okay. Yeah. That's now. Somebody else said about, you know, spaces and names. So say if the name was like your name, DiSapio,
right?
Is it DE, you know, space D with an A, you know, or does it have to be, you know, how does that work?
Well, the on my records, there's a DE space because that's the way it was on the birth certificates.
Mm-hmm.
Some, you know, if you're filling out like an electronic form, like I don't put the space in there just because it's easier. But yeah. on my documentation, there's a space. They go by the Italian original document. So if there's a space there, they're going to go use a space throughout. But if there's no space on the American documents and it's spelled the same, they don't have an issue.
It's not like there's an extra letter or letter taken out. It's still right. The same name. It's just a space or not a space.
Right. Right.
So this has been wild. I mean, first of all, Mike, I want to thank you so much for taking some time out to talk to us today because this has been wild. But I also want to talk a little bit because you are also heavily involved in your community in the tri-state area. So I think that we should talk a little bit about what you do kind of in your spare time.
They don't get mad at me if I didn't mention them.
So I know you're a part of a couple of organizations and groups that obviously are heavily into the Italian American.
Usually if it says Italian American in the title and somebody asks me to be involved, I jump at it. Yeah, I know. It's not work, you know, it's a lot of fun.
Actually, we have a comment here from Vittorio Graziani.
You're the best. So Vic,
you get things done.
Vic is on our local board. So it's the Italian American Heritage Club of Hunterdon County. I've been a member of that since college. I was a president for a few years, and we have a new president this year, Rose. She's doing a great job, considering the fact that it's all virtual. But yeah, it's a great group. My grandfather was a charter member in 1979. And we just had our 40th anniversary last year. And actually, we just talked about it before the show that we have a commemorative book that we have family member, you know, the members had their family histories and they put them together. We have a little section for history of the club and the pictures. And, you know, we even had a congratulatory letter from the Italian consulate in there. So we're publishing that, you know, as we speak. So we have just under 200 members and it's a great group. It's a family club and it's very diverse as far as people's, you know, Italian experience. Mm-hmm. We have people that are off the boat, people that are 3-4 generations removed, and it's a great time. Everybody has fun, and you don't need to be a resident of Hunterdon County. We encourage anybody to join up. So
the website we have posted on the bottom of the screen, www.italianamericanhc.org.
Yeah, yep.
So like you said, you don't have to be from a certain town. You could be, as long as you're Italian-American, you could join the club.
Yeah, yep, yep.
And so what are some of the other events that you do? I know, obviously, with this whole pandemic, a lot of events, a lot of things are being canceled. Yeah, so what are some of the things that you do throughout the year?
So we do, like, certain social events. We have a monthly dinner meeting where we have a guest speaker of some sort of Italian tilt. Talk to about what they do, or if it's an author or an entertainer or something like that. We do a La Cena Society, which is a supper club where we'll go to, you know, any Italian restaurants in the area or even out of the area, just to another opportunity to get together and share the table. Then we have a charitable foundation, which we raise money for scholarships for graduating seniors, and we donate to the local, a few local organizations, senior organizations as well. So to support that, we have a golf outing every year, which is our major fundraiser. We also have a gala where we started honoring Italian Americans of the Year each year, which is also, it's a great event. And unfortunately we had to postpone both of those this year, but we also have a bocce tournament and we have a bocce club where people play twice a week.
Really?
Yeah. And what else? We have bus trips to Philly and New York. We've done like operas or museum exhibits or cooking classes. We do wine tastings in the summer. New Jersey's got some great local wineries where we, go around doing that. We have movie nights. We bought speakers and a screen that we do movie nights every few months, which is great. What else? We march in you've heard of the John Bazelone Parade
in Raritan,
New Jersey. So we march in that every year, and that's always a lot of fun. We do a bus trip to Arthur Avenue every once in a while, which again, we had to postpone. So there's like every month there's something going on. So it's a lot of fun. It's a great group.
So again, if people want to check it out, and you say it's open for people, Italian or Italian Americans from outside the area too. So, you know, yeah. I'm up in North Jersey. If I want to come down for a meeting or something, I could become a member.
Yeah,
or,
yeah. I'm gonna plug you for a guest speaker too. For
definitely, I would be honored. Yeah. So you're also involved in the Italian American Baseball Foundation, correct?
Yeah, you know,
now I'll tell you one thing. When you think of baseball, you think of all the great Italian American players.
Yeah, exactly.
Obviously, Joe DiMaggio, Phil Rizzuto, Yogi Berra. I mean, the list goes on and on.
Yeah.
So what exactly, I mean, so it makes sense that Italian Americans, baseball, it all makes sense. So what exactly is the Italian American Baseball Foundation?
You know, I don't do, you know, a lot of the heavy lifting with this group, but it's a great organization. So a friend of mine, Joe Quagliano, and his friend Carmine, together with Frank Calinato, Joe was talking to him. I mean, they go to spring training for the Yanks every once in a while, and every year. But they got to talking about, you know, the glory days of these Italian American players and how it's kind of faded out, and there's not a lot of baseball talent coming out of Italy. Obviously, I mean, it's a soccer country through and through. Mm. So they formed the Italian American Baseball Foundation to grow the game in Italy, but also to develop youth players here and there, and to just, you know, grow the game of baseball. So it was, you know, Joe is a friend of mine, and he was talking to me about it, and I said, man, that's two of my great passions, which is baseball and the Italian-American community. So I went to their first fundraising dinner that honored Mike Piazza. Mm-hmm. And just a great group of guys. You know, most of the board members are like Brooklyn centric. So they got a great group together, great board. Mike Piazza was the first honoree, but then they had Bobby Valentine, and John Franco, he's stayed involved with the group, and he's a great advocate for the board. So, they're doing a lot. I mean, this pandemic has really hit them too, for as far as activities, and they had showcases planned for youth, college youth. And, they also are very involved with the Italian National Baseball Federation and Softball Federation. That's sort of how I got involved, was helping Italian American players that wanted to play for Team Italy. You know, they knew they qualified for citizenship and they wanted to get their paperwork together. So I reviewed a lot of their applications and so it's great. I mean, they have a great connection. It's really growing. It's really growing fast.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
And you're also involved, as am I, in the Italian Enclave's Historical Society. So how did you get involved in this organization?
So I was at the NIAF convention a few years ago, and Ray Guarini, who's the founder of the Italian Enclaves, he had this thing going where he was, went to most Italian neighborhoods, many Italian neighborhoods for years. He's collected this treasure trove of pictures from different Italian neighborhoods and documenting past and present. And he was one of the guest speakers on a panel at the NIAF convention. So that kind of caught my eye, and I started following him on Instagram. And then we got to talking actually at the IABF dinner, I forget which year it was. And I knew I recognized his name, and we got to talking, and I asked him to be a guest speaker at the local Italian club. So he came out here, and he's one of the more passionate Italian Americans you'll find. So, he might've described it as like, he's got like an all-star team of Italian Americans, like you involved. He's got Michelle, and Mike Grillo, and I don't want to name everybody, but like John Viola's involved now. Yes. It's really a great group of, just people that are prominent in the Italian American community. So we're really trying to get that off the ground to be the resource. If somebody wants to research, an old Italian neighborhood or a present Italian neighborhood and be like the database for it. So he's doing great work. We were on your show.
It was last week or 2 weeks ago.
Yeah. So. And I feel like this one better because I'm like the center square. I don't know you guys talking. So
I think that talking about Italian enclaves is a good segue, because I know that you have a connection to, it's a lesser known Italian enclave in New Jersey, but nonetheless still an Italian enclave of Raritan.
Yeah.
You mentioned John Bassalone. So yeah. What is your connection to Raritan?
So that's when I first met Ray too, I said, you gotta feature Raritan, New Jersey. So it's about 40 minutes from here, and we were involved in Raritan because they have a Catholic school there, St. Anne's, and a Catholic parish. And so I went to grade school there, and so did all my siblings and my cousins. And there was, I forget, it's in the teens, how many DiSapios went through there. So it still has a very – I mean, I know my parents want us to have a Catholic education, but I think the main impetus was that it's still an Italian neighborhood, so uh-huh. – for most of the Italian Americans that I knew growing up, it was from that school as opposed to, our area here. So it's just great memories there. They had Delucia's Pizzeria was my father says when he was growing up in the 50s, it was the closest pizzeria they had from Frenchtown.
Wow.
So, yeah. So they would go out there, and I believe there's like, it's four generations now. And it's a small town, but they support two Italian bakeries, which are both great. My grandfather had a hand in, he built the convent, his construction business built the convent outside of the St. Anne's school.
Wow.
So yeah. So it's a lot of good memories growing up there and, attending the Festa every year. I guess the rest of the state, it's kind of a little known Italian enclave, but it's still very Italian.
Yeah, I mean, because I only recently found out about it maybe 3, 4, 5 years ago that I really said, wow, there's something big. I mean, I knew John Bassalone was there, but I never really realized – that there was such a large Italian population. Yeah. I believe Bastallone was originally from Buffalo, and then I think that his family somehow ended up in Raritan.
Sure. Yeah, I'm not sure.
But I think that he traces his roots to Benevento. I believe that's the province where his family was from.
Yeah, that
I know that there were a lot of Calabrese in Raritan.
Yes.
Because one of my wife's cousins married somebody from Raritan, and they were Calabrese. And they were very devoted. I guess originally the feast there at St. Anne's Church was originally dedicated to San Rocco, St. Rocco.
Yes, correct. Yeah.
And now I guess originally the feast would have been in August, but within the last couple of years they moved it to, I guess it's June.
Yeah, I think it coincided with St. Anthony, but
yeah. So I think unfortunately it seems that a lot of these feasts that are beginning of the summer are being either canceled or postponed. Even one of my favorite feasts, the Giglio in Brooklyn, they just had to cancel it, which is heartbreaking because
that's a lot of fun every summer. Just if you missed one, there's always a feast somewhere that you could hit up. So
yeah, I mean, really, like I drag my wife every week, and we're at a different feast. And now it's just like I mean, first of all, I mean, I used to do podcasts on the road, so all of those got canceled, and now all my feasts are getting canceled. I'm like, oh, but at least I have this outlet that I can bring, you know, prominent Italian Americans, whether they're writers, whether, you know, guys like you, and just this is a great outlet to be able to still connect to the Italian American community, even though we are socially distancing. Although I've been thinking to myself, I don't like the word socially distanced. I think a better word is physically distant.
Right. Okay. Yeah.
Because we are, aren't we still, we're still being social. We're still having a conversation, but yet we're not in the same room.
Right.
I think physically they should change that. I'm gonna have to write to the powers that be. After Dr. Fauci, another prominent Italian American, change it to physically distant, not socially distant, because we are, especially Italians, we got to be connected, right?
Yeah. I mean, this has been very hard, I think, for the Italian American psyche, as a group. It's just it's tough.
I mean, think about it. I mean, really, you can't go to the local cafe to get a coffee. You can't go and sit at your pizzeria and just enjoy a slice.
Yeah,
everything has to be in your car. You gotta take it home.
I have to mention is Cafe Maria in Bathurstown, New Jersey, is right around the corner, and that's our go to place. You know, we don't really have a piazza out here, and that's our
what's it called?
Cafe Maria. Yeah, it's the Latrania family. Giacomo Latrania owns it. They're a great Sicilian family, and that's been hard, not going over there five times a week to get a coffee. So
I'm gonna have to put that on my list the next time I'm down in the area. I gotta
if you come out to Raritan, we'll just keep coming further and meet these guys.
Are they open during this or no?
Yeah, just for takeout.
Like everything. I guess even like Espo's and those old school spots in Raritan. So you call it. Oh, here, it's actually, see here. Vittorio says, I agree. Physical distancing. No, but it is true. I mean, I really think that we have to, in a weird way, this whole thing could kind of play on our minds, especially Italian Americans, that you can't go and kiss your nonna. You can't kiss your mother, hello or goodbye when you see him. Mm-hmm. All you got to do is wave. This is a tough time that we're living through.
Yeah.
Before we conclude, we have to, I mean, obviously at the table with Tony, I love to talk about food. We got to talk a little bit about food. I mean, this beautiful picture of your family, where are they? They're at a table. I think it looks like, was that a birthday cake there?
It looks like it.
So what are some of your food memories growing up?
Oh man. I guess it's a cliche answer, but my mother's meatballs. I've tried. She passed away 8 years ago, and trying to recreate them, it's just impossible. that's one of the big ones. My father and I share an affinity for sfogliatelle. That's always the go-to. Yep. And the during Christmas time, we have the pasta with alich, the anchovies and raisin, walnuts, and that's one of my favorites as well. There's a kind of a rift in my family where the DiSapio side, they make their meatballs with raisins and pignoli nuts, which I love. But not a lot of people make them that way.
That's almost very Sicilian.
Right. That's what people have mentioned.
Yeah.
We're Calabrese, so it's a mystery as to where the recipe came from, but there's I have five brothers, and three of us like them with raisins and pine nuts, and three like it just plain the way my mother would make them without the raisins. So that's been a great debate.
So now you're so the Sapio side is what is there from Avellino?
Yes, yeah, outside Avellino, it's a town called Montefort.
And your mom's the Calabrese, what was the town in Calabria?
Benestare, it's called. Benestare. It's right outside of Locri on the coast.
Is that Reggio?
Yes, okay. It's about an hour from Reggio. It's right on the edge of the province.
So you are an Italian citizen.
Yes,
correct. So have you been back to these places where your family's from and visit your family there or visit the people there?
I guess my first trip to Italy was when I did a study abroad in college, and I stayed in Milan for 6 months. And for holidays, we went down. That's when I met my cousins for the first time on the DiSapio side. And we've had a connection ever since. And that kind of opened my eyes to the Italian culture, separate from the Italian American culture. So we still keep in touch with that side. My mother's hometown, I actually did visit, and it's a great story. I mean, I went to Penn State University for undergrad, and I walked in the local pizzeria, needing a job, you know, for spending money. And the owner was Calabrese, and, he had those pads that the waiters use for writing down orders. He had about 20 different names and numbers in there of kids that the first week of school that wanted a job. So I left my name and he called me back and he said, yours is the only one that was Italian in that stack. his name was Massimo Napoli. And he was from a town that was 10 minutes from my mother's hometown. So we connected immediately. And he even, like I told him this later, he even has my mother's face, like you could see it in him. So, and he was a young business owner, so we're not that far in age. So we became fast friends, and I went to his wedding when he got married a few years later. He got married back in his hometown. So I went there and I said, man, I can't pass this up going to my mother's hometown. So we took a day and went out there. So I didn't, you know, connect with anybody out there or try to research, you know, her biological family, but just to walk around that town.
That's a connection.
Really, yeah, really something.
That's I mean, it is beautiful because really, I mean, you think about it, those, you know, to go back to these places where our family, you know, where they walk the streets, where they walk the roads. I mean, and also, I mean, you know, a lot of these towns aren't Rome. They're not Naples. They're not Milan.
That town in Calabria. I mean, a lot of that area in Calabria was just very untouched by tourism. And it even, you know, it got spared a lot of the damage that a lot of the rest of Italy for, you know, through the war, World War II. Mm-hmm. So it was a really, really unique place to visit. So I would definitely go back there.
So do you have any, so obviously now this is a tough time. We obviously can't travel. It's tough to travel. What advice would you have for people that once these travel bans are lifted, you know, should they, I mean, should, I guess there's, again, a two-part question. Should they try to start researching if they're interested in becoming a citizen to try to figure out how they're connected to the homeland? And then the next question is, you know, should people be afraid to travel?
That's no, I mean, don't ask me a question about the virus or if that, you know, as far as like going to Italy for the first time and should they be afraid to do that? Absolutely not. I mean, they should just jump in and do it. As far as researching their family, you know, I think I had the advantage of other family members having done a lot of the research. My uncle was the one that was actually the impetus behind applying for dual citizenship. We actually went through the process together. And he had done a lot of the research before I got involved. But I know, I know you listen to the Italian American podcast. Anthony Fasano was one of the founders. He wrote a book about the 40 days in Italy, I think it's called, about the process of him discovering his heritage and the way he went about doing the research. And I would recommend anybody to read that book because it talks about how to, I mean, you want to be prepared. If you're going to go to your ancestral hometown and ask for certain documents. You want to, you know, you want to research the process first. But as far as going to Italy and discovering it, you know, I would say you have to do it in a few trips, right? You got to, when you go to Italy for the first time, you got to hit certain areas and, you know, say you did it and get a feel for the country. But to go back and research your ancestral homeland, got to do it. I mean, don't put it off. Yeah. I would say, because you could always, if the trip's too short, you could always go back. You know, if you only have a week, go and do it. But most of, even though their English is a lot better than most of our Italian, so if the language is a fear, you know, start studying it up a little bit and don't be afraid of doing it. I mean, with Google Translate, you could get away with a lot more than you could 20 years ago. as far as communicating, right? So,
yeah. Ray just said, Tony, guys, this convo must touch upon food, please, somehow. we did talk a little bit about food, but I guess the question I can ask you
yeah,
is what do you have any favorite foods, any favorite places, you know, even in your neighborhood or your area, must try Italian places?
That's like saying somebody has six kids, like which one's their favorite. So I'd say, so for pizza. Okay. For the original, the New York slice, I'd say go to Carmine's on Graham Avenue in Brooklyn. It's amazing. Mm-hmm. But locally out here, we have a place called Luna Pizza that does Neapolitan style pizza, like high temperature, you know, pies, and they get all their ingredients from Italy, so that's also a comfort food for me, is going there. But then we've talked about Labor 2 down in Philly.
Yes.
They are an Abruzzese cuisine, and it's very really authentic, and it's just, you feel like you're sitting on a mountaintop with this little, you know, trotteria.
Even at the, especially if you go now when it gets a little bit warmer, when you're able to sit outside, they have that little mural. It looks like you're in Abruzzo. It's beautiful.
Yeah.
So really, even the food, the Abruzzese food is kind of totally different than what, say, like a Neapolitan is used to. So, you know, there's no spaghetti and meatballs. There's no, it's a very different cuisine.
Yeah. And then locally here, it's just called the Italian Bakery. They have one in Flemington, New Jersey, and the other one's in Raritan, and the Menino family, they're from Sicily as well. That's another go-to. You know, I miss the Saturday mornings. You go over there, you get a few pastries and an espresso, and
That's the place in Raritan?
Yeah, so they own one in Raritan and one in Flemington, New Jersey. Okay. But they, in Raritan, there's also Randazzo's Bakery, which they're awesome too. So for a small town to support both of them, you know, it's very passionate. So
yeah, we have to do what we can to support these little mom and pop shops. You know, I know Ray says, you know, hashtag support Italian American businesses. It is important
for sure
to support about, because you know what, you think about it, a lot of these places, unfortunately, if we don't support them now, when this is all over, they're going to be gone because there was nobody there to sustain them.
Yeah.
I mean, I know it's scary to go out and, you know, you got to wear a mask and gloves and this and that. But a lot of these places are adapting to what the current situation is. So whether they're offering takeout, delivery, curbside pickup, there are plenty of options now to be able to get your Italian your Italian food fix if you're not cooking at home. I can say, even for me, like yesterday, there's a local butcher shop. I went to the butcher shop. I ordered some stuff for the weekend. But I also, you know, I was there. He was cutting steaks. I'm like, he's literally cutting steaks in front of me. I cannot leave without getting a couple of steaks for dinner.
I saw that. I saw your poster.
So, you know, I grabbed a couple of steaks. And, you know, I made a nice steak dinner last night. Actually, yeah, Ray said, yes, Tony, you got it. The best support, hashtag support Italian American businesses.
I think what I'd like to ask your viewership, this is bigger than the saucer gravy argument, which is kind of played out. So when you get it, like a St. Joseph Zeppole,
okay,
you get it with cannoli cream, or do you get it with the custard?
That's okay. So I have a whole thinking behind it.
I'll give you my take on it.
Okay,
I'm kind of a purist, and I think a cannoli cream belongs in a cannoli.
Okay,
all the other pastries, it should be custard. And I have my brother. You know, I have a twin brother, and so we got cakes from the local bakery for our birthday, I don't know, a few years ago. And he's a cannoli filling guy, and I'm a custard guy, so we had to get two different cakes.
but for me, so what I say is a zeppole or a zeppola would be custard.
Okay.
But a sfinge would be cannoli. Okay. Right. So that's kind of like if I'm going to the bakery, especially like to a Sicilian bakery, and they have sfinge, I'm getting a sfinge. Okay. But yeah, if you go to another bakery, they have the zeppola with the custard. Then I go that route. So yeah, I'm definitely I definitely have a way to justify eating both of them. I'm gonna eat both of them.
But really, without it, you know, just the fried dough.
That's what you call. I mean, that's like what a traditional zeppola. You know,
yeah, yeah. The filling, but
yeah. Even they call it like pizza frita. But just the fried dough and a little bit of cinnamon sugar or powdered sugar, whatever. Right. Actually, that's the way they do it out in Pennsylvania. I've seen a lot of feasts, a lot of restaurants.
That's what the Festa does there in Raritan too, right? You get the
yes, they do. Yeah, they do like the pizza
one with the sauce to start and then the one with sugar to finish.
I mean, really, it's amazing how there's these so many different traditions, these Italian traditions. Because really, I mean, Italian cuisine is not Italian cuisine. It's like regional, and then even that, it's like even like down to the town by town. Yeah. It's whenever you get
different families pick up things along the way too. That's one of some of the more interesting discussions at the Italian club is how the cuisine has evolved. You know, your families could be from the same town, but one of them landed in New York, the other one came out here to Hunterdon County, and things just developed differently. And
absolutely,
that's fun. One of our events, we have a homemade wine party every November, so everybody brings whatever if they make homemade wine. And then we started calling it expanding it to a meatball showcase. So everybody brings their own meatballs, and we don't do a contest because it's impossible. You know, everybody would vote for their own, but that's a lot of fun too.
But Mike, I want to thank you so much for taking time out to come on the show tonight. If people want to get in touch with you, if they want to learn more about you, learn more about becoming a citizen of Italy, you know, just give us your website again. Give us your social media.
Yeah. So the website will have all my other contact information. You know, my email and phone number. And I'm on Instagram as Italian American Citizen. Very generic. I have a Facebook page, DiSapio Dual Citizenship Service. And reach out to me. I'm happy to do a free consult to see if we could figure out something, or if you have specific questions, hit me up.
Excellent. Well,
pastry spots or anything. I think we should do a virtual tasting. You know, we'll each go to our local bakeries and have a taste off.
That's a good idea. You see if we can share a little through the camera. I wish there was like smell. I know Emeril Lagasse always used to say smell-o-vision. I wish there was taste-o-vision. But again, Mike, I want to thank you so much for taking some time out for coming on the show. This has been a blast. I mean, I've learned so much, and really, I hope that I can become a citizen of Italy one day myself. So we'll see what happens with that. Stay tuned, as they say.
Right.
but again, thank you so much, Mike, for coming on the show. Again, I am Anthony Sciglia, better known as Tony Mangia. Just as a reminder, on Monday night at 7:30 p.m., we're going to be doing traveling to Italy in the time of Corona. So we'll be talking to two Italian tour guides, Italian-American tour guides, Daniello Terry and also Allison Scola. So I'm looking forward to speaking with them. That's going to be Monday night, 7:30 on YouTube and Facebook. So it'll be live. And again, if you have questions, I know there's going to be a lot of questions about, you know, when can we travel to Italy? How can we travel to Italy? So that'll be coming up on Monday night. So until then, we'll see you next time. Have a great weekend. Ciao for now.
Good night. Buonanotte.
Buonanotte.
At the Table with Tony would like to thank its sponsors. Rocco Muriale, Rob Quick, Joseph Cirillo, Raymond Guarini, Tom Gilmore, Oli G, Peter Ziza, Brian McGuire, Peter Ferreira, Rich Ottenstrauer, Anna Mavrianos, Antonio Pepinella, Anthony Ferraro, Sandra and Bob LaMotta, Mike Guerro, the Italian Enclave's Historical Society.